in every Friday afternoon from 2 until 2:30 on CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio, where we bring you the Community Living Show. Our half-hour show is produced by the disabled community, showcasing for BC self-advocates with lots of interesting and fun content, including engaging interviews with special guests with special needs. Join host Dave, Lori, Kelly, and friends every Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, because you've got a friend in community living and co-op radio. You got a friend in me.
Welcome to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, June 21st, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I am joined here in studio today by Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
And Danielle.
Hello.
Welcome. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and is also available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. On today's show, we will share an interview with Merida Anderson about her vegan secret supper, and also just giving some information about her book, The Vegan Secret Supper, and the Vancouver book launch that's going to be coming up, which is very exciting. And we'll also be speaking with our animal rights allies just south of the border. I'm talking about the Northwest Animal Rights Network, Seattle's all-volunteer grassroots organization dedicated to ending the exploitation of animals by raising awareness of animal suffering in the food, entertainment, experimentation, and fashion industries. Rachel Bjork will be speaking with us on behalf of the group about some of their current campaigns, including their wonderful vegan mentor program, their UW Watch program, bringing awareness to the issues of animal research taking place at the University of Washington, and their campaign to free the Woodland Zoo elephants. So we have a great show for you today, so please stay tuned.
Hi, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the Earthlings campaign that Whole Foods has been running. And for us in the vegan community, the word Earthlings obviously refers to the documentary Earthlings, which most of us watched, that probably helped us on our path to veganism. So mm-hmm. I was quite shocked when I was in Whole Foods one day and I saw advertising for Earthlings, and I thought, they're advertising Earthlings, the movie? And I was quite shocked that they were doing that, considering they sell a lot of meat and dairy. But nope, they have a campaign called Earthlings, and basically their campaign was last month, and it was with Earth Day, and it was about saying that we are earthlings, so join us. And their campaign said, explore the world through the eyes of an earthling, see something new every day. So for them, earthlings were just humans, and it was talking about doing everything different from what they eat to how they live to how they get around. And so they have a website, which you can see, earthlingsmonth.com, and there's a transportation section, which I thought was pretty good. It talks about bikes and longboards and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then a home section and parts about, you know, different light bulbs and, you know, energy saving things, which I agree with.
Eco-friendly living,
yeah. Correct. And then they had the food section, which the first thing I saw was compost, even your meat and dairy. And I was like, okay. And then I went on to read that they had spot the MSC label, and you can enjoy eating any of these species responsibly. So they had all these fish, and it links to this Marine Steward Council that says certain fish you can eat sustainably and responsibly and feel good about yourself. And I thought it was ridiculous, especially if you listen last week to our show, we had Witsa on from Blackfish that was talking about how fish has become the new green food when that is completely incorrect.
Oh, and it's so environmentally destructive.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
And he was talking about the mackerel. And so, and then there's a video that's called The Earthlings Film, which I was like, you can't change the name of a film.
Yeah.
And if you click on this film, it shows bees, it shows fishing, it shows meat on the grill, it shows cows and chickens on farms, and they're trying to show, you know, this happy meat, this humane meat myth that we often, as vegan activists, get, you know, in conversation. And so there's just, I mean, we can obviously discuss the humane meat myth, but there's a great article on the Free for Harm website. A gentleman there wrote a good response to this Earthlings because he saw it as well and was like, what
is
this?
His articles are always so great.
Yeah, such a great article. So I really recommend, maybe I'll post it on our Facebook page so people can read
it.
But he summed it up very nicely when he said, behind every small farm is a factory farm's connection. Livestock suppliers, breeders, auction houses, feed suppliers, transport trucks, and slaughterhouses. So, you know, this idea of the humane meat is,
And not to mention, like, all the mandatory procedures and things that all livestock, I don't care where they come from, they go through. There's all the tail docking, the castrating without anesthetic, debeaking, and also, of course, like, egg industries, people are like, oh, I can buy free range eggs and feel good about it. Well, you know, the male chicks are still killed. They come from a hatchery. They all come from the same place. It's just, like you said, the connections, they all are connected.
Yeah. And I think that oftentimes that these, you know, we've seen also different organizations stamp seals of approval on these eggs, calling them, you know, happy chickens. And but they don't have the whole story. The whole story is the happiest ones are ones that aren't involved. As long as there's any kind of farming, there'll always be factory farming because our population is so large that we can't all have these small farms. And like you said, these small farms all are all connected to these other connections where all eggs layers come from hatcheries. And after a while, they're no longer viable, so then they're sold at auctions where they become chicken stock and all these other things. And so, we may they may live a happy, quote-unquote, life for a short period of time, but like we know, most animals, almost all animals killed in the animal agriculture are babies. They're less than, what, five? Mostly 2 to 4. And so it's, I think it's a very horrible campaign to use the word earthlings because most people know what that word is, and their whole campaign is about this it's all natural type idea, which is just quite shocking, especially because the CEO of Whole Foods,
I was gonna say vegan
and
what the hell.
Exactly. He calls himself an ethical vegan, which I find offensive because, you know, there's diet vegans and things like that. And he's also has a book called Conscious Capitalism or something. So, I mean, he's an interesting guy, but I just, you know, the campaign also had, you know, these images. They had this one man with all his sheep and, you know, trying to show these connections. And this, it's just such a disconnect though, because those sheep are going to die.
And like, it kind of brings up the question, like, how can you humanely slaughter? Like, it's just, it's so weird. Like that people think that this can be done humanely. Even
like the most humane, I've seen images of like the absolute most humane, like proudly shown, like in documentaries, like this farmer going like, this is the most humane, like, you know, like even like the chickens and the cone upside down thing, like that's apparently the most absolute most humane, the thing that they're proud to show. It's horrifying. It's still horrifying to see.
Totally. And you know what, like, I think, you know, people are conscious consumers, and the reason the humane meat is so big right now is because people are trying to make these ethical choices. But I guess it leads to the question, like, if you don't need this to survive, how is it morally or ethically acceptable, I guess, right?
And that's exactly it. And I think, you know, getting into this idea, too, of, like, privilege, because these are expensive meat products, so it's like only the rich can afford the happy animals and everybody else, and it just doesn't fit in our society, and so it just, it doesn't make sense, and it's not sustainable.
Unfortunately, it's a very a sad misconception. Thanks for sharing that, Cynthia.
Vancouver Folk Music Festival, July 19th to 21st at Jericho Beach Park. over 60 music acts from around the world, including the Dixie Chicks, Natalie Maines, Steve Earle and the Dukes, the Waterboys, the Cat Empire, Loudon Wainwright III, Divotchka, Hannah Georges, Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, and many more. Get weekend passes at the early bird discount rate until June 11th. For tickets and info, go to thefestival.bc.ca. The Vancouver Folk Music Festival for the best weekend of your summer. July 19th to 21st at Jericho Beach Park.
All right, so here is what is happening around town in Vancouver. So, I'm sure people that are regular listeners have heard this mentioned once or twice before, but every Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. outside Commercial Drive and Hastings, the intersections, there's a slaughterhouse out there for chickens, and we are doing a vigil every week. And just to bring awareness to what's going on there in their own community, and also just, you know, to hopefully help a few people make more compassionate diet choices. And on the same day, Fridays as well, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., join Vancouver Animal Defense League at 3888 Main Street, Sault Ste. Marie in Vancouver, where they'll be speaking out for the sharks and against the horrific shark fin industry. So 100 million sharks are killed actually every year for their fins, simply to be served in a soup such as that at Sault Ste. Marie restaurant. And these are endangered species, so we need to speak out more for these animals.
Endangered species that are just killed horribly. And
oh, it's brutal.
Awful, they're,
yeah,
awful way.
Fins cut off and thrown back in the ocean. Yeah, awesome. And like I was mentioning earlier, the Vegan Secret Supper book launch is Thursday, June 27th. So that's next Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. And this will be at Dunleavy Snack Bar, which is at 433 Dunleavy in Vancouver. So Chef Merida, who we'll share an interview with later, and Arsenal Pulp Press invite you to the Vancouver launch of their new cookbook. Come meet Chef Merida, which is the founder of Pop-Up Supper Club VSS. Pick up a copy of Vegan Secret Supper and sample some incredible appetizers at Dunleavy Snack Bar. So come down for snacks, drinks, books, and chats. And this is a free event with free food. So
you had me at free.
I know. Everybody likes the word free. And another event that actually my co-host Alyssa and I are going to be doing is an animal rights vegan support circle. So that will be taking place July 14th from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Location is still kind of to be determined, but likely somewhere in a park in East Van for at least the first night, if it's kind of weather dependent, obviously. So for more info and to RSVP, please go to meetup.com. I'll just tell you a bit about it. So to make our movement more resilient, we feel it's important to have a strong network of support. We value compassionate communication and the practice of self-care as foundational to effective activism. We welcome all individuals, from seasoned activists to those who are just starting the shift towards a more compassionate lifestyle. So if you don't feel like you're a full-on animal rights activist or committed vegan, please join. Like, we want everyone's opinion in this, and we want everyone to feel supported. So if you care at all about non-human animals and want to make a difference for them, you're welcome to join. We aim to create a non-judgmental, inclusive space where we can build meaningful connections, have fun, practice mindfulness, share ideas, struggles, experiences, learn, and process through journaling and creative expression. So we'll see what it turns into, but we're really excited about this starting, and hope to see lots of people that care about animals out there.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I'm going, so I'm excited
Yay,
about that.
Cynthia. Yay, Cynthia. Do you guys have anything else to share?
I was just wondering if you went to the chicken protest. I know you've gone to almost all of them.
Yes, that's amazing. I missed last week because I overslept.
It's okay.
I had a late night, and I'm like, oh no, the chickens.
Yeah.
Chickens. Anyway, but yeah, I've been going pretty regularly, and it's great. You get so much positive feedback. We were shocked, actually, like from the beginning to the end, like how much positive feedback today. Today we had someone, like, literally, like, the whole time he's at the stop sign just honking his horn repetitively and, like, waving at us, like, giving us mahalo hand signs being super friendly. So it's really nice to have that that positive support. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you for going every week. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. All right. And now I believe we have our first interview for everyone. All right. So today on the show with us, we have Rachel Bjork of Northwest Animal Rights Network, or NARN, to speak with us about their current and ongoing campaigns for the animals. Hello, Rachel, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Can you start by telling us a bit about NARN, how the organization was started, and what kind of work you do for the animals?
Well, NARN has actually been around since the late 80s, and it was started by a group of concerned activists in Seattle, many of whom are still involved in NARN, and they wanted to help animals. That's why they started it. And they were very purposeful in creating the network part of it, because they did want to network with other groups in the area, because we've recognized for a long time that, you know, we may have different tactics, but a lot of the animal groups are really working towards the same end goal. So we've always felt that networking was a big part of our mission.
Great. And what can you tell me a bit about, I guess, maybe what kind of events or, I guess, demos and things that NARN has done previously? Or just maybe a little bit about your methods.
Currently, we focus mostly on veganism and getting the word out there about the best thing that an individual can do to help animals is to not eat them. So that is where we do spend a large part of our time. We also have educational events and demos about the University of Washington, which is a local university, and they have one of seven primate centers in the area. So many people are not really aware of the scope and number of animals that are being tested on at the University of Washington.
Okay.
And we also have a campaign to get the elephants out of the Woodland Park Zoo, so we do events surrounding that.
Okay, great. And I love your whole idea of networking. That's so important, especially like since we are such a small community, we really need to get together with all different groups. That's really great that you do that. And I was looking over your website, and one of the things that I was really interested about, I think we need something like that here, is your vegan mentor program. Like, what a great idea. Can you tell me a bit about how this program works and who it's geared towards?
Yeah, we're really excited about that, this program, and we're still getting it off the ground. But the idea is that it is difficult for many people. They may be interested in veganism, but they're not really sure how to get there. And I don't know about you, but when I became a vegan, it was a gradual process for me, and what really cemented my commitment to it was knowing other vegans and knowing my purchasing choices matter and just knowing kind of how to make that transition. So we're there to provide support for people to become vegan and stay vegan, because I'm sure we all know people that tried out veganism and it didn't work for them for a number of reasons, because they just didn't know any, or they weren't eating the right foods or any of that. So we're there to provide a support system, and the idea is sort of do it on a one-on-one basis. So we have mentors, people like myself that have been vegan for a long time, that can help people that sign to mentees that sign up to, well, what do I buy, or my family's giving me a bad time, or just kind of there to be a sponsor, as it were. And we have a little form for people to fill out so we can match them up. So if somebody has kids, we'd match them up with a vegan that had kids, or if somebody doesn't like to cook, then we'd match them up with another vegan that doesn't like to cook, so we can get people that have similar background or interest, so it's a little more of a make sense matchup.
Oh, great. Yeah, it sounds wonderful. I mean, when I hear people like that are kind of in the transition period, I try to mentor them as much as I can anyway, but it's great to have something formal like this for people that don't really know anybody or don't know who to contact. That's a wonderful idea. And what kind of results are you having from this kind of mentorship?
Well, we have a lot of people that are interested in being mentors, and we're still trying to widen our pool of mentees. Mm. So we're still getting sign-ups, and we're still working on getting the word out there to people that we're interested vegans might hang out. So it's not just, we've done a lot of work on posting things and like where vegans go, but we want to put things out there where the general public goes. So we're still working on getting a wider advertising base out there.
Okay, great.
And we do still need a little help, actually, in case anybody's interested in helping us administer the program, because currently our board member is pretty overwhelmed with it.
Okay, so anyone in Washington that's hearing this, contact NARN for more info.
Yes.
And can you tell me about the UW Watch program? What kind of research is going on at the University of Washington, and what kind of tests do the animals endure?
They do a lot of sort of basic research. They're not really testing the new drugs or anything like that. They're doing things just to sort of see what happens. Unfortunately, it's sort of they do things like brain mapping. They still do a little bit of maternal deprivation. They'll test to see what happens if they give infant babies. They'll dose them with carbon monoxide. I mean, that sounds terrible, but they do pretty awful things. They have a couple ongoing protocols that sound very similar, where they'll stick electrodes literally in a monkey's skull, and then they'll have them watch a screen and see what parts of their brain lights up. And they've been doing this for years and years and years and years and years. And they do infectious disease research, and so they'll do tests for HIV, but monkeys cannot get HIV, so it's sort of, in addition to doing terrible things to monkeys, you're wasting time and money by testing HIV medicines on animals that cannot get it. So it's things like that, and we work on just making sure our people are aware of not only the number of animals, but the scope of research going on there, because a lot of people are under the impression that they're in cancer research or something, that they're under the false impression is somehow going to help humanity.
It's all funding, isn't it, when it comes to research?
They receive a tremendous amount of money from the NIH, and so as taxpayers, we are paying for this research.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have got budget cuts going on, and you have young mothers losing funding, you have people not being able to get help for education, and they're spending all this money on pretty much useless research.
Absolutely. Well, it's so heartbreaking. Can you tell me what types of actions or outreach NARN has done or is currently doing with the UW Watch program, and what has been most successful? Do you have any particular stories that you'd like to share about this?
We haven't had as many successes as we'd like.
Okay.
You know, animal experimentation is a pretty big it's a pretty big thing. And we would, again, like to have more help with that. But we do demonstrations in front of, there are several facilities that they have. They have an infectious disease research facility in downtown Seattle. They have an infant primate research facility in one of the medical centers where people go to go to the hospital. So we'll do educational demos around that, you know, hold signs and leaflets. And we also go to home football games and for the University of Washington, because they're very popular. So people want to go and watch the football players. And that's actually been more successful in terms of the feedback I get from the attendees. Because you might not expect people going to a football game to necessarily care about animals, but it has been actually pretty positive. You know, people walking by and taking the flyers or saying positive things to us. So that has actually worked out really well, and we can reach a large group of people. And of course, a lot of people go to the football game. So that has actually worked out pretty well.
Great. Yeah, I think a lot of people, I've done some work with our local group here, Stop UBC, and I think a lot of people are just so shocked and surprised at what is actually going on. People know, like, they think of animal research being like, you know, it's for a reason, right? You're helping people. But yeah, when they learn the truth, it can be really shocking. So I think you can really reach anybody, even those football fans like you're talking about.
And it's important to give them something to do, not just tell them about it. But, you know, write to the president or write to the Alumni Association and tell them why you're not going to give them money in action for that person who's receiving the flyer to do.
Absolutely. Great. Thanks for sharing that. And another campaign of NARN's is directed towards the Woodland Zoo in Seattle, Washington. This is the current campaign to send the elephants that are kept in captivity at Woodland Zoo for human entertainment to the elephant sanctuary. What has drawn NARN to advocate for the elephants in particular at the zoo, and what kind of suffering have these elephants endured?
We were initially attracted to elephants because someone came to one of our meetings and expressed her concern. And this is a classic example of just if someone has an issue that they care about, then we encourage them to come to us. And if it's something that we can take on, we do. And so this woman named Nancy came to one of our meetings and told us more about the elephants and said that she would really like us to do a campaign about it. So that's how it started. And it also makes sense because a lot of people are very attracted to elephants, and the zoo, you know, likes to advertise we have elephants, and they think the little kids want to go see the elephants because little kids don't really understand that they're miserable in the zoo. So it's a big source of money, actually, for the zoo. And at the time, they also had an infant, Hansa. Hansa was a baby and who unfortunately died. So the elephants are a source of money for the zoo. And they only have 1 acre. There are 3 of them in 1 acre. So it's there are many animals in the zoo that suffer, the big cats, because they also have a little bit of room. But the elephants provide a focal point. So we can say, look, we're just asking about these animals here. We may not like the zoo in general, but in order to have a more attainable goal, and we're just talking about these elephants. And we have a place for them to go. We say, look, this sanctuary over here will take the elephants free of charge. It will come and get them free of charge. So we have a solution for these elephants, somewhere for them to go. And the zoo has been holding on to them pretty tightly because they don't want to lose the source of people paying the admission to go to the zoo. And the AZA is also quite formidable, and they have punished other zoos for releasing their elephants to sanctuaries.
Mm. And I think...
So we're still working at it. It's, you know, we're going to keep on at it, but it's a bit of a slog.
Yeah, totally. It's really hard, isn't it? And I think I read somewhere on your website that there was something about elephants being like beaten and stuff. Is that something that happened at the Woodland Zoo, or
they have done that in the past? They now have a no contact type thing, but they're kept in because of the climate. It's a little cold here for elephants. Mm-hmm. They're kept inside for majority of the day.
Oh, yeah.
So. They have stereotypic behaviors as any animal in captivity would have, with its head swaying, and the elephants were previously hit, but that's not really something they're supposed to do anymore.
Okay. And also, NARN currently works to provide support for activists imprisoned from anything as simple as making a speech or peacefully advocating to using illegal but non-violent actions to prevent animal suffering. And I just want to mention for people that are Canadian, which are some of our listeners, in the U.S., you know, you can be labeled a terrorist just for being an activist. Can you tell me how and in what ways NARN provides support for the unjustly imprisoned activists?
We have a little website that maintains a list of some of the prisoners, and we encourage people to write letters, because if you're stuck in jail, then at prison, then it's a pretty boring existence there. So we do encourage letter writing. We have campaigns to make sure that they get vegan food. So those, the two primary things are letter writing and making sure that they have adequate food while they're in prison.
Okay, great. And how can individuals help or get involved with the Northwest Animal Rights Network?
We welcome anybody to get involved, and they can go to our website, which is the narn.org, so that's narn.org, and they can get our weekly email. We also have a Facebook page, which is the Northwest Animal Rights Network. They can email us, info@narn.org. We have a lot of volunteer opportunities, whether you just want to do something from home. We don't have an office. We all just volunteer and kind of work out of have our day jobs and then do stuff at home when we can. But the more help we have, the more we can help animals.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rachel, and all this information to speak about the wonderful work that you do for our animal friends. To learn more about the Northwest, oh, thank you. To learn more about the Northwest Animal Rights Network, or to donate or get involved, please go to narn.org.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now I'm going to talk about some news. So first I'll talk about some happy news, because the rest of it is not so happy. In New York, the Senate passed a bill for an animal abuser registry. So the New York State Senate has passed a bill that requires convicted animal abusers to register their name and address address with criminal justice services. Additionally, they will undergo psychiatric evaluation, and they are banned from owning a pet again, which is great. And so this bill was passed because of this 1999 animal cruelty law, which makes it a felony to abuse animals. And so this is wonderful because now rescues and places that sell or adopt animals is the better word for it. Rescues, of course, we don't want to talk about breeders. They can go on the registry. It's online, and they can check the person's name and see if they have abused animals in the past, which I think is great if we could have a worldwide registry that...
Everywhere.
Yeah, because, I mean, how many times in the news we hear stories of, you know, animals being abused by different people, and then we can't remember all their names. And so I think it'd be great to pass this, something like this, everywhere, including Canada.
And laws just need to get stricter, because there's not really, there's so many. I know that when a group like, for say, the SPCA, when they go in and they hear about a complaint about animal abuse, they have to go check and say, okay, well, if you follow these restrictions, which are minimal restrictions, we'll leave you alone for a little while, basically. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's not enough, because who knows what other animals they have there that are suffering. You're just helping out maybe one or two.
Yeah.
So I think we need something like that in Canada or everywhere.
Everywhere.
It would be awesome if they did that thing that sex offenders do. They have to go to your dorm like, hi, just to let you know I'm an animal abuser and I live next to you.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
That'd be great. And then you could just keep your pets away from the animal abuser. Do not walk your dog.
Do not look at that man or woman.
Do not walk your dog near that house. So now, some interesting news, sad news. Human organs could be grown in animals within a year. So Japanese scientists are expected to be granted approval to grow human organs inside animals and then harvest them for transplant within a year. Scientists plan to induce a human stem cell into the embryo of an animal, most likely a pig, to create what's termed a chimeric embryo that can be implanted into the animal's womb. And then it'll grow into a perfect human organ, so they say. And as the host matures, and then when the adult creature is slaughtered, the organ will be harvested and transported into the human with the malfunctioning organ. It just sounds like something out of a sci-fi.
Sounds like some of the dystopian futures.
Yeah, it's insane. Right now, they're not allowed to do this. It's illegal to implant embryos into an animal's womb. It's just the most insane type of animal cruelty.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and so hopefully this won't get passed. I'll look in to see if there's any petitions, and perhaps we can post that on the Animal Voices website. And then on to Sumatra in Indonesia. So we all know that the orangutans and the palm oil situation. Well, now elephants are being poisoned by palm oil corporations. And so in Sumatra, two critically endangered Sumatran elephants were found dead in an Indonesia national park, and it's believed they're poisoned by workers for a palm oil corporation operating the area, according to the World Wildlife Fund. Now, three dead elephants have been found in the Teso Nilo National Park in Sumatra last month. And so the carcasses of a five-year-old male and a female were found on Friday within a kilometer of each other. And the wildlife spokesperson said, we believe that the elephants were poisoned as the carcasses were quite close to each other. And the autopsies are going to be conducted shortly.
That's crazy. Palm oil. Do not buy things with palm oil. People.
Yeah.
It's so like, just don't buy anything processed, because palm oil is in friggin' everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, as vegans, we'd want to cause the least amount of harm. And so that includes, you know, staying away from palm oil and
as much as you can. I mean, it's so hard because it's in everything. But just try to minimize
read the ingredients.
I think had a great recipe for making your own palm oil free vegan butter or something like that. It sounded really cool.
Great.
Yeah. Awesome. And then into China, where the China Dog Meat Festival will proceed despite animal rights group protest. And so despite continuous outrage and protest, China will go ahead with its dog meat festival as planned this week, beginning Friday. The festival is an annual celebration that takes place in Gansu province that is considered an ancient summer solstice tradition by local residents who cherish the lychees and the strong grain liquor. And it's unfair to call the Yulin people brutal only because we have this tradition to eat dog meat, Annie, a local resident, say. People who call us uncivilized and cruel should stop eating meat in the first place. Which is interesting, but which makes sense with speciesism. But it's the animal activists say, however, the festival is completely cruel. Like the opponents claim that dogs are transported and kept in inhumane conditions. Many dogs are also burned, electrocuted, and skinned alive to be eaten.
Not unlike our, you know, farmed animals here.
And chickens.
Yeah. So, and pictures of the mistreatment can be found online, and nearly 10,000 dogs are slaughtered each year for the festival goers. The meat of which some doctors believe can treat impotence and poor circulation.
Sounds kind of like similar things that they say about shark fins.
Yeah, shark fin,
or like
yeah.
bear bile or yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah, and but the interesting part is many of these dogs are strays from the streets without quarantine certificates. So if anything, they would be dangerous to eat because they're eating whatever because they're street dogs. And so
as horrific as this is, I think that for people that currently do eat meat, if they think that this is horrific, just remember that this is going on here with many other species, not dogs, but many other species. And if you find, like, speciesism, like you mentioned, totally relates to
like
this.
Like carnism, too. Just like that disconnect. But just, like, goes to show, though, just how important constant vigilance is. Like, I remember the last Dog Meat Festival was canceled due to protesters and, like, constant, protesting against it. And it's still going on. You got to keep protesting and keep making your voice heard.
Yeah, that's interesting that it was canceled this year. And so, unfortunately, it's still going on. So, yeah, not good. And then into Israel. So Israel can be really progressive with animal rights.
Yeah, they've been doing some really cool things.
Yeah, they've done some amazing things. So, interesting, another story about foie gras. I think I talked about foie gras last week. And so they were banning the import and sale of foie gras, but recently two of its government officials have changed it and gone back to the cabinet, and now the bill is not being approved anymore, and so foie gras is no longer banned. And so animal activists are really upset because obviously foie gras is just cruel.
Oh,
like
geez.
All animal.
Well, it's like you talked about in last episode, like the Mercy for Animals undercover investigation that they did at the foie gras place.
There's no way to make that a nice thing. You're causing liver disease in these animals by force feeding them with a tube down their throat.
That is
foie gras.
And some people will justify it and say, well, like, you know, in the natural world, in their migration, they do overeat before, but not in like the way that they are force fed into like sickness. They eat, we all overeat a little bit when we're like, you know, about to fast or whatever. I don't know, but like, seriously, it's so insane.
Yeah, it's insane. So hopefully that'll change because that's crazy. And so we all know what's going on in Calgary in Canada. It's horrible with the flooding. And so, you know, we were speaking to Narn about zoos, and the zoo is flooding in Calgary. It's under, you know, a foot and a half of water. And so officials have been trying to move the exotic animals, especially the large cats, which they're trying to move to the Calgary courthouse if necessary. And obviously it's a huge struggle to try to move these wild animals. I mean, this just shows you how zoos are just a horrible thing, because in a natural habitat, when there's any kind of natural disaster, animals
sense it.
They find high ground. And so now they're in captivity and they're probably sensing this river and everything, and they can't move them. I think
they're
stuck.
They're stuck.
Yeah. I read something about they moved the gorillas to a certain area. And I mean, you can't just like put them in the back of your car like you can do with some pets and things like that. And even pets, like I remember when there was Katrina and those different things happened, a lot of pets got left because, you know, pets are the last unfortunate thing. And like the zoo, they're not the first important thing for the people there. And so
absolutely,
just another reason why there should be no zoos, because you, even in situations like this, what do you
keeping,
with the animals?
Yeah, keeping exotic animals, it's just, ugh.
Yeah, and so, yeah, there's four lions, two snow leopards, and six tigers, and three cubs. How do they have so many animals?
They're breeding program.
It's so, yeah, that's quite ridiculous, but so hopefully everybody in Calgary is safe, and all the pets are safe, and
wonderful.
All the people.
Right, great. So, so like I mentioned earlier, we are going to share with you now an interview with Merida Anderson of the Vegan Secret Supper book, which will have a book launch that I mentioned earlier in the events. So I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah.
Here we go. Erida Anderson is a vegan chef from Vancouver, currently based in Montreal and New York. She's arguably the one who brought vegan underground restaurants to Vancouver when she started her vegan secret supper now 5 years ago in East Van, and she inspired the thriving culture of vegan supper clubs the city currently has. Earlier this year, local publisher Arsenal Pulp Press published her long-awaited first cookbook titled Vegan Secret Supper, Bold and Elegant Menus from a Rogue Kitchen. It's a really wonderful and inspiring book, certainly one of the vegan cookbook highlights of the year. I reviewed it on our show of March 29th, so check out our archives if you'd like to hear more about it. I hear it's hugely successful, and the first edition is already close to being sold out, and rightly so. Next week, Merida is coming to Vancouver to finally officially launch the book in her hometown. Also, on Saturday 30th of June, she will hold a vegan secret supper in North Van, but don't get your hopes up because it is already completely booked. You might get on the waiting list if you visit her website, vegansecretsupper.com. But you can get a taste of Merida's food, however, if you come to the book launch. The book launch will take place at Dunleavy Snack Bar at 433 Dunleavy at Hastings on Thursday, June 27th at 6 p.m. Merida will prepare some snacks and she's inviting everyone to come by, check out the book and say hi. There will also be music by Andy Dixon, so it promises to be a great evening. I'm sure you might run into a couple of producers from Animal Voices there as well. So, to get you in the mood for this great event, we are rebroadcasting an interview with Merida, which we originally recorded in 2010. And after the interview, we will play one of Andy's songs, in which he actually collaborates with Merida. So stay tuned for that.
Welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. So why is this called Secret Supper? What is the secret?
I guess because it's not a real restaurant. I guess that would be why it's secret.
Okay. So it's hosted at your home?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So I know your secret suppers are not really all that secretive because I've seen it covered on CBC and the Vancouver Sun, Veg News Magazine, and tons of foodie blogs. So what do people have to do to get a table at your secret supper?
Really just have to email me and then we can chat it from there.
Okay, and how do they find out about your email address?
I have a little website.
Okay.
So we can get it through there.
Okay, excellent.
And, yeah.
Now, what motivated you to start the Vegan Secret Supper?
I actually went to a supper in Halifax with a friend of mine who does it, and it was a three-course vegan supper, and it was really inspiring to see that, and oh, I should totally do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working on a cookbook for a long time. I was like, it'd be perfect. I could just, test out the recipes and...
So are you a chef? Were you a chef before this?
No.
did you cook at home?
Yeah, I'm curious to know what your background is in cooking because, man, all of your menus look amazing. I have yet to try it yet, but I am always going, oh, my goodness, that looks so delectable. It looks so sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
What process did it take for you to get to where you are now in cooking all of these delicious meals?
Well, I've been vegan for 10 years. And I guess that's when I started learning how to cook myself when I was 16. So I don't know. I just kept cooking. And my brother is a chef. And if I sit down and talk to him for, 5 minutes, he'll explode my mind with food knowledge. And I don't know. I just, if you just do it enough, you just get there,
Wow. So I guess you're just a natural talent. So I know that the Secret Supper has intrigued a lot of foodies who normally wouldn't even set foot in a vegan restaurant. So why do you think that they all want in on this vegan Secret Supper?
I think it's a lot of the experience of it, and I also don't try to make it, you know, I don't want to make it scary for someone who is really, like, there are a lot of skeptical people when it comes to vegan food, and and I just want people to come in and eat good food, regardless of what they think, you know, open their mind to be like, oh, vegan food doesn't have to be, like, what they thought it was.
Right, right.
And it's not, I don't really cook with tofu and things like that to make it also a little more accessible.
Okay, so you cook with more like fresh ingredients that are familiar with to most meat eaters?
Well, that's, no, not really. I guess I just don't, I don't use much soy anymore just because I, you know, when you're vegan and you realize one day that you've eaten soy at every meal. Doesn't feel that great.
It is possible to be vegan without soy, despite what some people
totally
might think.
Yeah, I've been soy-free for a month and a half now, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great.
So how many people do you normally serve on a Sunday night?
I think that's from, like, 20 to 30.
20 to 30. Mm-hmm. And does it pack up your place?
Yeah, I do two sittings.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So are all these dishes original recipes that you've created?
Yes.
Wow.
How do you think of these?
Yeah.
Okay, for example, we've got this week cauliflower pea curry with baked mustard, sweet potato on parsley quinoa with coconut sour cream and papadum. How does someone even think of creating that, like, mix of flavors? And how do you do that?
I don't know. I think it's, you know, I think my brain is, like, probably on it all the time. I'm always thinking about it, and also, you know, looking at what's in season or what's in your backyard or what's, I don't know. I don't even know.
So these combinations just come to you because you're just always thinking about them. You just went one day, cauliflower would go really good with baked mustard sweet potato. And, you know, there you go. Voila, you've got a dish.
Kind of like Picasso, right? You can't say, how do you know how to paint something so nice?
Well, I think you are an artist of sorts.
Yeah,
an artist of food for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess so. Yeah.
So, what kind of feedback are you getting? I'm curious. Like, people, I'm guessing there's, you know, the regular vegans, but as Joanne mentioned, a lot of, like, those foodies who are not necessarily vegan, and just people from all over who've heard about you from the Vancouver Sun or CBC. What has the range of response been like for your meals?
It's been really great, actually, and actually most. I would say about half and half are vegetarian and half are not.
That's, like, great.
You know, maybe one vegetarian will bring, you know, their friends or their family and, oh, no, I'm a meat eater, you know, and they all come out and, you know, I think they're pleasantly surprised, especially the meat eaters, because, you know, they're expecting, they have expectations of, you know, what they think vegan is. And for the vegans, you know, there isn't, I mean, there's getting to be more in the city, but, you know, it's definitely an option that, is there that you can't find everywhere.
I know a guy who went to your Secret Supper earlier this year, and he told me that it was the best meal he had ever eaten by far anywhere, vegan or non-vegan.
Wow.
I don't know if he told you that, but wow, I just thought you'd like to know that.
Wow.
And I do mention that, you know, I promote your suppers on our show pretty much every week, and I have mentioned that before just so people can get out. I yet have not made it out, but it's definitely on my list.
Mm-hmm.
I know Joanne has gone out a couple times.
Yeah, I've been there twice, both with meat eaters, and they just cannot stop raving about the food. So I wanted to know if you have any future plans to share your recipes. You mentioned something about a cookbook.
Yeah,
I've been working on a cookbook, and I mean, unfortunately, my computer crashed and I lost everything.
Oh, no.
So
back up.
I know. I backed it up and I backed it up wrong because I'm not that good at it. But anyways, I am working on a cookbook eventually, and so hopefully I can, you know.
Well, everything is in your brain, right? You're inspired, so you can come up with multiple cookbooks if you have to.
Yeah.
So what's the next Secret Supper menu?
Well, I guess it's the one that you mentioned.
Okay.
That's this Sunday, and it's a three-course roast fennel and portobello soup with rosemary, sage oil, and chive flowers.
Wow. That sounds fancy.
What you mentioned, the cauliflower pea curry with the roasted mustard yams on a coriander parsley quinoa pilaf with mm-hmm. coconut sour cream and papadom. Mm. And dessert is a dark chocolate cake with local organic hazelnut, caramel, and lavender white chocolate ice cream.
That sounds delicious. And how much is the three-course meal for?
It's 20.
Oh, my goodness.
That sounds like a good, really great deal.
Totally. That's great. So, yeah, we hope lots of people will show up after listening to Animal Voices.
What's your website, Marita?
It's vegansecretsupper.com.
Pretty easy to remember. And I believe your email address is also pretty easy, vegansecretsupper@gmail.com, if people just want to shoot you an email to make a reservation. And you always have your upcoming menus on your website, right?
Usually, a week before I'll post it.
And photos. Just see the photos and then you'll get so excited you want to go. So thank you so much for chatting with us, Marita.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Marita Anderson talking to Animal Voices back in 2010. Since we talked to her then, she moved her suppers from Vancouver to New York and now she's running them in Montreal. As mentioned before the interview, Merida's cookbook, Vegan Secret Supper, was just published by Arsenal Pulp Press. To celebrate the arrival of her hotly anticipated book and to taste some of her creations, don't miss the launch party Thursday, June 27th at Dunleavy Snack Bar in East Vancouver. The evening's music will be provided by Merida's friend Andy Dixon. And speaking of secrets, here's a song from Andy Dixon's project Secret Mummy called Grand in the Mouth. It actually features the lovely singing voice of Merida Anderson herself. Enjoy!
That was an awesome song. I love that. That was so fun. So just another reminder that that interview was from 2010. So unfortunately, this Sunday, she is not having a dinner. Although on Thursday, check out her book launch. And if you missed our couple times that we mentioned it on the show today, please check out animalvoices.org and look under today's show. And there's a link to it at the bottom of the page. So yes, please check it out and support Merida. So thank you so much for joining us today. We here at Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by liking our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us your suggestions and comments about this show. This is a listener-supported radio station, so we really appreciate all your comments that you have, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And also, please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where shows can be downloaded from after airing. And if you appreciate the work that we do here at Animal Voices to bring you original quality program on the topics of current animal issues and compassionate living, please show us your support by making a donation to us at animalvoices@coopradio. Because we do really rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that you're donating towards Animal Voices. And if you're in Canada, all your donations are tax deductible, so every little bit helps. So we thank you so much for your assistance. Please stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith, and remember to be kind to the animals. We'll be leaving you today with a show, One Species by True Nature. So.